Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guests are Brett Weiler, Director of Capital Formation at the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership, and Amanda Kachurka, Program Director at the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership. Brett, let's start with you. Could you please give us an overview of your position at the Chamber?
Yeah, so as the Director of Capital Formation, I've been hired to explore the multitude of economic development tools that are available to us to spur investment and spur development. The Erie Refocused Plan and the Action Plan that came after that really identified that Erie has underutilized these tools over the years. And, you know, for whatever reasons, I'm not clear. But there are a multitude of tools, whether it's new market tax credits, low-income housing tax credits, tax increment financing districts, or the new, most exciting one that everyone's talking about is the Opportunity Zone provisions. It's my job to get a better understanding of those programs and determine, when appropriate, how we can utilize those tools here in Erie to accelerate the rate of development and investment.
Brett, correct me if I'm wrong. You left the chamber and came back for this opportunity, right?
2 years ago, I was the director of research grants and business outreach for the chamber. I was a happy employee. I enjoyed working here. But I had the opportunity to join Mayor Joe Schember's administration as the first ever business development officer. So the time and the opportunity was right for me. So I joined the mayor's team under the guidance of Chris Groner in the Department of Economic Development in February of 2018. And in that short year, I began to become immersed in this new Opportunity Zone program and how we could leverage this new tax provision to benefit the city. And through that process, I was asked to develop and became the architect of the city's first ever investment prospectus, which is a hybrid tool designed to really market projects to investors locally, regionally, and nationally. Some of the key stakeholders involved believed that there really needed to be a point person to attract Opportunity Zone investment. And because I was so immersed in the work at City Hall, they thought that maybe I was that person. So in true Mayor Schember fashion, said that, you know, he gave me his blessing to come down and join the chamber again because he felt the move was ultimately best for the city. He was not concerned about whether I worked in his building or another building, but he thought that I was the right person for the job and that this was truly a powerful tool to accelerate investment and development here in Erie. And so if he wanted me to take this challenge on, and so he again gave me his blessing to come back and rejoin the chamber as of a couple weeks ago.
Brett, from your perspective, what are the opportunity zones?
Yeah, so it was a bipartisan provision, which I always like to make a note of because you don't hear of much bipartisan legislation these days, but it truly was a bipartisan effort. And it was a market mechanism, a tax incentive tool that was built into the 2017 tax cut bill. And really what it does is it tries to activate capital gains. There are estimates that there are $6 trillion worth of capital gains that are essentially sitting on the sideline. So people have stocks or assets that they hold, but they're not selling. And many times they're not doing so because of the tax rate on capital gains is substantial. It's around 24%. So the Opportunity Zone program is designed to incentivize capital gains to come off of the shelf and facilitate and aim those capital gains dollars to be invested into communities that have been left behind, severely distressed communities. And what the federal government did was allow governors to designate their opportunity zones. And those opportunity zones are based on census tracts. And so the federal government allowed the governors of each state to designate up to 25% of their eligible census tracts as opportunity zones. Eligible census tracts had to meet a certain number of parameters, poverty rates, unemployment rates, median income. Communities, again, that have been left behind, that have not recovered in the same fashion that major metropolitan areas have recovered since the Great Recession. So, long story short, the city of Erie, under the guidance of the mayor and some external stakeholders in the business and the nonprofit community, applied for 8 census tracts to be opportunity zones, all of which were approved by the governor. So what that means is individuals or corporations who have capital gains can reinvest those capital gains into projects inside opportunity zones, and they will receive preferential tax treatment. They'll receive a deferral on when they have to pay taxes. If they keep the investment in long enough, they will see a reduction in the amount of taxes they have to pay. And then if they keep that original investment for 10 years, any appreciation on that investment is tax-free. So it's a patient market mechanism tool designed to filter capital to people and places that are left behind. And I know that probably wasn't the best summary. It's, again, this is a new program and it's complicated. So to try to explain it sometimes, you know, we're still crafting our pitch and crafting kind of our explanation because there's a lot of moving parts to it.
Why is Erie further ahead of the curve compared to others doing this?
Yeah, I think the timing of the Opportunity Zone provisions was perfect for Erie. I think that there was already some market momentum here. I think the Erie Refocus Plan, the Emerge 2040 Plan, I think really catalyzed a lot of people to take action. I think you're seeing major investment from some of our largest anchor institutions like Erie Insurance, Gannon, the health networks. I think the turnover in the mayoral administration contributed to it, and that's not to, you know, talk ill of the previous administration, but I think the mayoral election created a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And so all of that is going on, and then this program comes out, and this program is, I think, really seen as a tool to really finally spark and ignite the ongoing momentum. And it's finally given us an opportunity to attract that much needed outside capital. So I think we had a lot of people working together already. This just further coalesced a group of leaders from the private, the public, and the nonprofit sectors to sit down and agree to be aggressive with this program to try to get out in front of it. We've also been able to leverage a number of relationships that we've built over the years with some national thought leaders on these types of community revitalization programs. So we've tapped into that network as well for guidance, and also they have enabled us, or they've helped us get some exposure on a national scale for some of the good work that we're doing.
Brett, what is the flagship Opportunity Zone Development Corporation?
It's a great question. It's a single member LLC, and the Chamber of Commerce is that single member of the LLC. And really it was an entity that was developed so that we could focus and allocate the appropriate amount of resources needed to attract Opportunity Zone capital. There was an agreement that this effort really needed to be outside of the walls of city government for a number of reasons. And those reasons are really this separate entity allows me to be a little bit more innovative. It allows me to perhaps maybe raise the appropriate amount of funds to execute what's really needed to attract investment. And we believe in order to attract investment, we need to reach an audience of investors, developers, social impact organizations digitally with a website and a digital marketing campaign and execution. We need to attend trade shows, investor conferences, and travel the country to meet these folks and to showcase our projects. And then we also believe that we have to execute a pretty large event here locally and bring people to the marketplace to see all of the different projects that they can invest in. And that's really hard to do under the purview of municipal government just because of budget realities and constraints. So this separate entity, again, allows me to be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more creative in how we do things, and ultimately allows me to gather the resources and the financial the finances that are needed to really execute this at the appropriate scale.
The need to attract investors is big. Can you tell us about the timeline with this, and has it already begun?
You could say it has begun. I think that because of the way the provision was written, there is some urgency to attract investment in 2019 and 2020, because that allows investors to receive maximum benefits of the program. So our thought process right now is we really need to cultivate a healthy pipeline of viable projects, and then we need to take those projects to market in the next 12 to 18 months, because that's where we believe you'll see the largest flow of investment from national investors. Concurrently, we're talking with local organizations and local institutions about how they can perhaps create funds and invest locally. So, but there's a sense of urgency, I believe, that 2019 and 2020 is where we're going to see most of the capital flow locally, regionally, and nationally. So we want to make sure that we have a healthy pipeline of projects.
Brett, could you tell us about the city's investment prospectus?
Yeah, so the city investment prospectus is a hybrid tool, three parts. It's one part local economic analysis from a qualitative and a quantitative standpoint, trying to assess what our economy looks like currently and perhaps where it's going. It's also a marketing piece. We speak a lot about what we believe are our market strengths. It's that market momentum, it's the diverse economy, the market proximity to major markets, access to water. We also address what are some of our challenges in that document, because we think that there's social impact investors that will see challenges actually as opportunities to invest and make a difference. And then the third part of it is an investment memorandum, if you will, where we feature specific projects that we want to showcase and that we want to put in front of a variety of investors.
What are some of the big projects you anticipate promoting?
So we've organized our eight census tracts into what we call a market map in the investment prospectus. And so that map outlines, we have a central business district where I think the premier investment opportunities are obviously some of the work that the Erie Downtown Development Corporation is doing and the property they've purchased, and some of the activity that you see in the Erie Innovation District. And then also I would say the two Bayfront projects, whether it's the Scott Enterprise Development Project or the Erie Events Bayfront Place Development Projects. I think those are two premier investable projects that we want to highlight. We also have our adjacent neighborhood districts. So I would summarize those as the best neighborhood in the east, and then the R West Bayfront District in the west. And we believe that there may be some residential and commercial development opportunities in those districts, and we're still fleshing some of those ideas out. And then we also have what we call our industrial development districts. So that would include the SB3 site on East Lake Road, or the Savakio Business Park, or perhaps reimagining the 12th Street Industrial Corridor. Are there any opportunities there to perhaps purchase and repurpose some of the industrial buildings out there? So we're in the process right now of really kicking the tires, if you will, on identifying viable investable projects in the city.
Could you clarify the role of the flagship a little bit more?
The role of the flagship Opportunity Zone Development Company, there's really two general purposes for that. On the front end is really cultivating that healthy pipeline of projects, conducting outreach to project sponsors, identifying where they are in their development process, and then connecting them up with any appropriate resources or services to help them move their project along so that we can then take that project to market, to shop in front of investors. So that first part is project prep. And then I would say the second part, the second role of the flagship development company is project promotion. We want to build a diversified portfolio of projects that we can then take out to market to showcase to different types of investors, whether that's a downtown mixed-use development project or perhaps that's an industrial development project. So once we complete that project prep, we're hopeful that we'll have a project portfolio with diverse opportunities that are going to interest investors across the country.
Amanda, let's bring you in. Could you give us an overview of your position with the Chamber?
Yeah, so I started with the Chamber actually almost a year ago in a business outreach specialist role. And so basically what that meant was I was responsible for going around to businesses in the region, meeting with them to hear about challenges, concerns, areas where maybe they need a little bit more help or a little more training, and then putting them in touch with the resources that could provide that help and that training. So it was kind of a handoff situation, just making sure that when I referred them to someone that there was that contact made, that they heard back, and then we kept the ball moving for them.
Amanda, what are a couple of things you wish business owners knew about the Chamber?
One, probably first and foremost, is how much work and effort we're putting into really building the value associated with Chamber membership through the educational programs that I'll be creating as the program director, of course, but then also, you know, re-examining our sponsorship opportunities, continuing our network events, revitalizing some of our existing events. The business brief blog that we started is a great opportunity for our members to get the word out about their business. So lots of great, exciting things coming as far as Chamber membership goes. So that's really exciting. And then the other thing, just going back to what I mentioned about the business outreach specialists, I think that's a position that not enough people know about. And so you don't have to be a Chamber member to take advantage of that service. Our business outreach specialists are available to meet with anyone. There's no cost associated with it. And it's really their job to help you solve your problems. So that's something that I think more people should be aware of and take advantage of.
Could you tell us more about the business outreach specialist and some of the services they can provide even to a non-member?
Sure. So just as an example, some of the things that came up for me a lot of times were conversations about marketing was always a big one. You know, how can I better market my business? What are the tools that are available to me? Who should I be contacting about this? So that was an opportunity for me to sit down with the business owner and really go over, okay, what are your existing, you know, activities? Where do you have a presence? Do you have a website, social media, email marketing? What offline tactics do you use? And then from there saying, okay, well, if you're really looking to build that social media presence, you should be talking to these people. And so then it would be my job to put them in touch with those people and provide that direct referral. So it was taking a lot of the research time and the guesswork on the business owner's part out of the equation, because I think, you know, you're running your own business, your time is very valuable, you wear 100 different hats, and so to try to carve time out to research, well, what website firm should I be using, or who does social media management locally, they just don't have the time to do that. So this was making that process a lot easier for them.
Amanda, can you tell us about some of the programs that are upcoming?
Sure. So we've got lots of exciting things coming down the pike. In April, we're looking at doing a two-part hiring session with a gentleman named Brian Whittington out of Pittsburgh. He works for a company called Peak Performance Management. The first session will cover things like how to find people, where to find people, the concept of right person, right seat. So not only looking at a candidate's hard skill set, but also how they fit into the culture of the company. Something I think that business owners don't necessarily think about right away, but is something that's very important. How do they fit with the rest of the team? And then the second session is covering the actual onboarding process. So, okay, you've identified this candidate, you've interviewed them, you've said, yep, this is the right person that I want to bring on board. So what does that training and onboarding process look like? Making sure that you're bringing them on in a way that not only will they understand what their responsibilities are, but also where they fit within the company culture. So we're really excited about that two-part session. That's going to be a good one, again, coming in April. And then something that we're working on this summer that I'm really excited about is a cybersecurity boot camp. That's going to be a partnership with Mercyhurst University with some of their faculty there. And so that'll be a four-part, it'll be four sessions, 2 hours each, that will be very hands-on. So it's actually going to be held at Mercyhurst in their labs. I think when it comes to cybersecurity, that's a topic that's really scary for a lot of business owners. You know, they maybe know it's important and they've heard horror stories about attacks that have happened and the thousands, if not millions of dollars that it can cost a business. But the how-to piece, I think, is lacking frequently. And so that's what we're really aiming to offer, is not just developing an understanding of different kinds of cyber attacks, but also how to protect yourself from them happening in the first place. But if one does happen, what do you do? You know, what does the response need to be? And then also, if you decide that maybe you're not comfortable managing that cybersecurity piece in-house, what are the questions that you should be asking a potential firm that would handle that for you? So the goal is really to make it very approachable and accessible for small business owners that, you know, may only be a one or two person shop. Also exploring a program that's a partnership through Goldman Sachs and Babson College in Boston. It's called 10,000 Small Businesses. The program is a pretty rigorous, from my understanding, growth planning program that is referral based. So you can apply, but your application's gonna get a lot further if you have been referred by someone that's already gone through the program. That's where James's Missoula, Montana connections have really come in handy. So we're looking at building a pipeline of businesses from the Erie area that could go through that program. There's some online work, some work in person at Babson College, but Goldman Sachs really rolls out the red carpet for those program participants. You know, there's all expenses paid. It's a very thorough curriculum. And the people that I've talked to that have gone through the program have just said wonderful things about how it's impacted their businesses. And one even said it completely changed the way that he ran his business. So from what I can gather, it sounds like a pretty amazing program. So the goal would ultimately be to start building some businesses to go through the program here in Erie and really create an alumni network that can then serve as that referral source. So we're excited about that as well. And then sort of generally speaking around topics, of course, sessions with the Opportunity Zones with Brett, there's a lot of education to be done in various audiences in Erie on that topic. Diversity and inclusion is a big one for us that we're starting to sort of kick the tires on right now, looking at what sort of training should we provide to make businesses in the area aware of services that can help, especially where the refugee and immigrant populations are concerned, with helping them find jobs and integrate them into existing companies in Erie. And then also a small discussion and accountability groups, I think, is a huge opportunity for us that we're looking forward to. Panels to offer opportunities for businesses to sort of meet the vendors. So we say, okay, you're looking for a website. We're going to pull together a panel of our members that offer that service, and they're going to tell you about how that process works to be able to help you make that decision a little easier. And then, of course, a partnership with Young Erie Professionals. We want to offer some topics that are relevant to young professionals as well. So lots of things. Definitely will be a full schedule as we move forward. And the great thing about the programming is that it will be open for attendance to both members and non-members. We want to make sure this training is accessible to everyone.
That's incredible that it's available to both members and non-members, because it is only really an investment of time that could make a big difference for a company, right?
Yeah, so there will be the majority of our sessions will have some cost associated with it, depending on the cost that exist to put on the session. And so the only difference might be a price point differentiation between members and non-members. But James probably mentioned in his session access to information, education, and people as his sort of theme for moving the chamber forward. And so the access to education is really my wheelhouse, and that's what we want to offer.
Amanda, can you tell us about your most recent program, Athena Speaks on Law?
Yes. So last week we launched our first in a quarterly speaker series that's geared toward women's leadership development issues, and it's called Athena Speaks. It's a partnership with Athena Erie, which if you don't know, Athena Erie is an organization that's dedicated to the empowerment and development of women leaders in our region. Athena hosted a private screening of the Ruth Bader Ginsburg biopic On the Basis of Sex. That was back in January, and it was very, very well received. There were over 200 people in attendance. And so Linda Stevenson from Athena said, you know, I really want to build on that. I think we've got an opportunity here to continue this discussion further and have it springboard into something really amazing and useful for women leaders in our area. So the partnership with the chamber just made a lot of sense, especially with me coming on board as the program director. So this first event, we featured District Judge Susan Paradise Baxter as our keynote speaker. She was absolutely phenomenal. And then we had a panel of three female attorneys from Erie. We had Meredith Bollheimer from Mercyhurst University. We had Colleen Stump from the Quinn firm, and Andrea Amicangelo from Amicangelo and Tyson. And they all talked about different aspects of being a woman in the legal field, and also some gender discrimination issues that they've encountered with their clients. And so it was a really interesting look into sort of a continuation of the topic from the movie. And so the quarterly sessions moving forward, we're looking at May, August, and November for the remaining three sessions. The topics will be different. They won't be on law, but still relevant to women's leadership development. And the sessions are open to men, too. We did have some gentlemen in attendance at the Athena Speaks on Law, and they gave really great feedback. They said, you know, it was eye-opening to hear, especially some of the gender discrimination issues that are faced by clients that the attorneys work with. It was a very eye-opening experience for them. So that's really what we're aiming to do, is to help bring some attention to those issues and ultimately help women develop into better leaders.
What have you found are the most pressing educational needs of business owners in our region?
Yeah, so I alluded to these a little bit earlier. Workforce is probably a big one. You know, how do I find the right people? How do I keep people? How do I keep my employees engaged? And looking at this concept that sort of goes along with that, this concept of upskilling. So providing educational opportunities to your employees to help them move up in your business, to help them gain more skills so they become more relevant to the business, and ultimately with the hope of, you know, keeping them engaged in their day-to-day work. Marketing is another huge one. Everything from social media, websites, search engine optimization. You know, if I'm going to have an offline strategy, what should that look like anymore? Does the newspaper still work, is a question I get a lot. So providing some resources related to that. And then probably the biggest one that is not necessarily verbalized in this way, but that's kind of the point they're getting at, is how do I more effectively budget my time so I have time to work on the business, not always in the business. That's a really huge one. And that comes back to goal setting, prioritizing, having a strategic approach to every single minute of every single day. So you know when you come in, okay, I've got this time that's dedicated to work in the business, I have this time dedicated to working on the business, and what that balance looks like. That's a tough one for a lot of small businesses, especially if they're a one-person operation, but it's so, so important, because that time working on the business is what helps with the strategic growth. And if you don't dedicate that time, that growth isn't going to happen.
Finally, Amanda, how are you collecting future program ideas? Can business owners, both members and non-members, submit ideas for programs that they'd like to see?
So I was having a conversation with one of my colleagues about this the other day, and I said, we really can only be as strong as the voices who give us feedback and participate in the process. And so I'm very, very open to hearing what business owners in the area want to learn about. If there's a topic that is of interest to you, if there's a skill that you'd really like to develop, or maybe not even you as the business owner, but your employees, if there's a skill that you'd like to have them develop or something you'd like to like them to learn about, I want to know. So I would say my contact information, my email address is available on our website, on our staff page. So feel free to send me an email with your topic ideas. At this point, I'm open to anything. The sky's the limit, because that's the cool thing about being the first program director for the chamber, is that I'm working from nothing. So I get to build this, you know, however I want, and with James's guidance, which has been extremely valuable. So if you have an idea, I want to hear about it.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard Fridays at noon. Join us again next week as Logistics Plus is in the Business Spotlight.